Hello and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Hannah.
And simply put, we review cookbooks. We take one book for each episode and both cook a couple of dishes, then discuss what we liked, more likely what we didn't like, and give it a rating out of 5. Like all the best recipes, it's pretty simple.
And if you love what we do, we're now on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help cover the podcast costs from the books themselves, the ingredients of what we cook, and in return you'll get some fun stuff. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now for the podcast. Hello.
Wow. It's the night time again. In the night.
Oh. Yeah.
We're so fucking weird. And the night makes us weird. Anyway, hi Hannah.
Hi Victoria. How's it going?
Good, thanks. You know. You don't know. Well,
I saw you a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
that was
can
nice.
Can you believe that, guys? We saw each other for the first time in like 6 months, 3 months. Not sure how long it's been. A while.
It was 6 months. I think it was February since I came down the last time. Down, over, across.
Across, around.
Anyway, it's lovely. We ate lots of food.
We ate lots of great food and pastries.
What was your food highlight of my time there, actually?
Great question.
Mine might have been that vegan croissant from... Not Faro, the other place.
Oh, that cashew cream swirl from Bristol Loaf.
Bristol Loaf, that's the one. Yeah,
that was
who
great.
Knew a vegan croissant could be so good?
Yes, and we both had vegan bammies and they were like so good.
Just saving the planet one bite at a time.
One bite at a time, that was so Irish. One bite at a time is our, you know, rock band of the week. Rock band. Everyone. It's our guitar band of the week. Just turning into somebody's dad, you know?
What's been happening? What are you liking, looking forward to, excited about in the world of food? Gastronomy.
Gastronomy. Well, first of all, and I'm not going to dwell on this because I feel like I could be judged for it. But anyway, I've got an air fryer.
Why would you be judged on that?
Everyone's
got an air fryer.
Yeah,
the cost of living crisis is an energy. The energy cap is rising. And you can cook your food in 90 seconds, so...
The energy cap is rising, the ice caps are melting. There's just lots of caps doing things. There's a football joke in there, but I can't make that. I can't do
no,
it.
No, I was struggling. Caps lock? I don't know.
That's what we need. The energy cap needs to be locked. So that's
air fryer. Have you made anything fun?
No, I've literally made like chips, and we're not potato people in the house, right?
We don't potato people. This isn't a potato house.
Not a potato house. We're a rice house generally.
That would be messy in the air fryer, wouldn't it?
But I will keep you posted on any fun things I make. I mean, there is a world of annoying TikToks that I can get into, and you know. Obviously, I'm going to change my mind about rubbing my knife on the top of
things
to show how crispy it is.
Things being food, not food, just any old thing. Rubbing your knife on top of like
my
scalps.
Baby's head.
Yeah.
So crispy.
Yeah, I think we should have a feature every episode from now on, which is like your air fryer, you know, tip of the week.
Oh, yeah.
Things
okay.
that you can make. I'll start this week and you know what I'm going to say here. But it's that the air fryer makes a mean cookie.
Yeah. I mean, that's Hannah's air fryer tip. I can't wait to make cookies in it.
Oh, so good. My sister has one in Abu Dhabi. And I made these obscene peanut butter and jam cookies from Vice. And we had some in the freezer. And then you put them in the air fryer. And they're the perfect crispy on the outside, gooey on the inside consistency. And they go from frozen to cooked in no time at all. What more could you want?
Literally nothing. And it saves energy.
Both yours and, you know, electricity wise.
Exactly. So I'm going to be making cookies.
Making cookies.
Making cookies. So that's fun. I will let you know next time what fun things I've made.
Great.
In other news, the great British Bake Off.
Bless bless you.
Easy for me to say. I was going to say, the Great British Bake Off is coming back. And then I was like, Whoop. Oh, the Great British Baking Show, if you're in other parts of the world.
Because
that's
what
they call it. So that's coming back in like next week, by the time this episode goes out.
In news of phrases that don't translate well, did I tell you that the name of my Great British Bake Off blog was The Great British Take Off? Where I would, like, do the professional recipes.
In case you want to put that on OnlyFans or something.
I wasn't taking off my clothes, sadly for you guys. But no, as in taking off something is, like, to make an impression, you know, to do an impression of. So I was doing the professional.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it must be an Irish thing. It's like giving out. You Brits never understand the phrase giving out either. Like, telling someone
off. Yeah, you said that a couple of times at the weekend. And I was like, I understood it in
blank face
in context, but not long. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, Bake Off.
Bake Off is back next week, and I think I don't know how you feel about Bake Off at this point. I feel like it's kind of it may
dead.
Be entering. Oh my god! Wow, I can't talk. Entering the end of its life. You know.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Good podcast.
I don't love it anymore. What I do love is Noel Fielding. I love him.
In a comedy way?
Every sense. Comedy, romantic.
Oh.
Platonic. Every way. Oh, Vic's got a really judgy look on her face.
But it's Noel Fielding. I know that if you fancy him now, you fancied him since you were younger because
yeah,
you were probably a fucking Flight of the Conchords
fan.
Flight of the Conchords? That's not him.
Mighty Boosh.
Mighty Boosh, fucking weird. Not my jam.
That was weird. No, I didn't love that either. Anyway, what I was going to say about Bake Off is I like Noel Fielding, but its heyday was when Mel and Sue and Mary Berry was there, and before Paul Hollywood got this weird, like, you know, developed into this weird, mean Simon Cowell-esque persona and made the handshake a thing. It's not a fucking thing. It's just like grown out of nothing. And they made all the bakes, like, really weird and neat.
Yes, they're so hard.
So, yeah, I don't know. I'll still watch it. Yeah. I don't
obviously.
Mind.
Obviously. Come back to hear our takes on it. Yeah, I feel the same. I think that Matt Lucas, who's the new presenter alongside Noel Fielding, if you've not watched it, he's mean. He's a bit nasty to some of the cooks, I think.
I hate that.
And I don't think... I think that a lot of... This happened last year, I think. A lot of the... articles and stuff written about it said it just gone its niceness had gone, and that's the whole point of it, right? The camaraderie, that like it's in a tent, it's got this little like plinky plonky, you know, it's very like British, which I think is why people liked it. It was nice, everyone made like scones and shit, but it's like you said, the bakes are weird and hard. I think that it's too much. I say this every time, and I've said this before on the podcast, the bakers are expected to be brilliant technically and also brilliant at like presenting.
Aesthetic.
Yeah.
Yes.
And doing these big, you know, like icing sculptures and all that stuff. And I just don't think that amateur bakers who have, you know, some of them have 3-4 kids and a job can be good at both. Brilliant at both enough to get past a lot of these challenges.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to eat what I bake, but I never really like how it looks. And my theory is that, you know, things that look too pretty, like too perfect, end up tasting like shit because you have to use some kind of material in there that's like, you know, like marzipan or, you know, fucking fondant or something oversweet.
Yeah, there's definitely a reason why, like, some people have wedding cakes, right, that are made of literal polystyrene and then like decorated with icing, and they look, that looks beautiful, but the cake is not, you know, tenable. Yeah, so we'll wait and see about who and what that is going on.
Maybe for our Patreon pals. Do like a little, whether it's a little post or a little video or something, we do our, you know, Bake Off takes after
take-offs
every episode or something. Bake Off takeoffs.
I feel like we should call it that. You know, bring that back.
Thank you. Thanks.
And yeah, let's do that for our little Patreon-y pals. Patreon-y fans. The pick off, take off.
So, but.
What are we talking about today?
That's not.
We are the not. Chef we, are talking we are not about in Britain today, are we?
We're back in Brooklyn, baby.
Brooklyn, baby.
I got two books for the price of one. Both, you know, I haven't seen yours, you haven't seen mine, but. I lugged it all the way down to Bristol and you probably should have had a look.
Yeah, literally, Hannah brought her book all the way to my house and obviously I have the house. I also have the book that I'm doing. And on her way back to the station, I was like, probably should have looked at your book for this episode.
No, because now I'm going to tell you
anyway,
about
tell
it.
Anyway, tell me about it.
With great humour and detail.
Anyway, it's Alison Roman.
Yes. So, I think Alison Roman... arguably, might be the biggest, you know, best known chef that we've talked about this season. Do you think?
Oh, this season. I was like...
Oh, not ever, ever. No, no. No, no, no. We've had Delia Smith. Come on, get... What did she say?
Let's be having you.
God, I love it so much. Okay, let's talk Alison, right? Because, you know, I feel like we need to be snappy this episode because we've got two books to get through. And this woman... Good Lord, there's so much content about her on the internet. I'm definitely not going to cover it all. And, you know, Google her yourself.
Wow.
Sorry. Anyway, so Alison Roman was raised in LA.
I'm going to try not to interrupt you, but God, I didn't know that. But she looks like she's from LA. Jesus Christ.
I think I might. Kind of fancy her, right? Yeah. Like, you know, she's a babe.
Her face,
you know.
Not her personality.
You're going to be like, even her elbows are horrific. Only her face.
Awful.
Yeah, she's got kind of Cali girl vibes. Anyway, so she, raised in LA, she went to the University of California in Santa Cruz at the age of 19, where she was studying creative writing. Oh no, she didn't go there at the age of 19. She went at normal age, but she left at the age of 19.
Oh,
she's to pursue
a beauty school dropout. I don't know the rest of the words.
To pursue. That's the French for pursue. Sorry. To pursue a career in the food industry. So then she worked for 6 years in different restaurants around California as a pastry chef before she moved to I wanna be a part of it.
New York.
You know, she did that classic coming of age thing, moving to New York. And where did she start working when she moved to New York? Just a little old place called Milk Bar. Which we may remember from our David Chang Momofuku episode.
Miss Tozy.
Fingers and toesies.
Head, shoulders, knees and toesy, knees and... Alison, Roman, Christina, Tozy. They worked together and made some cakes.
I should have looked up if they have, you know, crossed paths. But there's so many things when you're looking up Alison Roman, actually, where you're like, oh, shit, there's not enough detail about that. Or there's not enough. Yeah. Like, she's had such a career. So, yeah, she's working at a Milk Bar. And then she started as a freelancer at Bon Appetit. Like her pal Molly Baz, our old other Brooklyn friend. We need to go visit them both, but they wouldn't have us.
I feel like after this episode, maybe Molly would. But definitely Alison would.
So she started as a freelancer at Bon Appetit and then she became permanent. She became like senior editor or something. But
just to confirm,
Molly.
Here.
Yeah.
She's not been to culinary school.
No.
Okay.
Not that I could find anyway.
I don't think she has.
I'm not going to lie. It was hard. This was hard looking at her because there was just so much content, right? And there's so much like kind of gushing pieces about her in like the New Yorker, New York Magazine, where, you know, it's like artsy photos of her in a camel coat. And it's like, what is this piece called? Alison Roman just can't help herself. And it's about how, like, you know, she has the interviewer over to her flat in Brooklyn, and it's a lot of like exposed pipes. She puts on some moody music and lights a candle, and you're just kind of like, okay, I get it, she's a hipster. As part of that piece, actually, it's like, she's always a cook, often a writer, occasionally a performer, I don't know when she's a performer, and never a pushover, even when she's getting in her own way. In a world where everyone feels the need to be excessively polite, she's excessively herself. That's a quote from one of her, like, I don't know, producers or video directors or something. The wankometer is high on this, so it's just, yeah.
And I'm guessing, sorry, I'm going to stop interrupting you, but no, I'm guessing all of these gushy articles and a lot of this stuff come pre the drama that I'm sure you're going to talk about, and, you know,
it was
basically her cancellation, right?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, mostly before, but actually that New Yorker piece was after. It was 18 months after the incident. Hashtag the incident. So, okay. I mean,
Please carry on.
You could have a whole section on her, like, hashtag viral recipes. So the first one to go viral was hashtag the cookies. So that was actually from this book, 2018. Yeah, these chocolate... salted chocolate chunk shortbread. We've both made them, right?
They're so good.
They're a great cookie.
They're my favourite cookie.
Are they your favourite cookie?
Maybe to make. Not,
yes.
Not of all time, but like to make. Yes, I think they are. Mm. I feel like they're my... I go back to them all the time. Anyway.
Yeah, they're great, right? Because it's a very short dough, and then you roll the kind of cylinder of dough in like demerara sugar, don't
yes.
you?
Yes.
And there's chocolate chunks, and then you slice them and you sprinkle salt on and you bake them. They are superb. And you can totally tell that she... Actually, in general, I think I prefer her pastry recipes to savoury across the board. But, so yeah, they're massive. And then months later, she joined New York Times Cooking as a regular columnist.
Right.
So that was obviously the hook for her. And that was after this book, so Dining In. So she does Dining In and then becomes New York Times cooking columnist. Other hashtag recipes that went massive were The Stew, which was like this chickpea, turmeric, coconut milk thing. Have you made that?
No.
I've made that. It's nice. You could probably, you know, call it some kind of dal if you wanted, but yeah, I've read pieces on how it's just a dal and everyone is just like, why are we calling it a stew? But, you know, whatever. There's a whole bit on, like...
cultural appropriation.
Yeah. We don't have enough time in the world. And then the last one that went big was in 2020, and it was, or the most recent one, it was The Pasta. And that was New York Times Cooking's biggest recipe of the year, most visited recipe of the year. And that's where you... Have you made that one?
I don't know if I know what one that is.
That was the caramelized shallot pasta. I made it once. You chop a ton of shallots down. You caramelize them. And then you put in like a whole tin of anchovies, I think. And then
sounds like
some tomato. Yeah, tomato puree. That's your sauce. And I can't remember if you put in some like pasta water or whatever. And then I think it was bucatini that she said, but I think I used spaghetti. It was everywhere. It was huge.
Yeah. I think I do remember it.
And I guess it was nice during lockdown, right? Because it was real like store cupboard stuff. You would have all that crap there. And then, so basically then she got herself in a little bit of trouble. So she was doing an interview where she was discussing her own capsule collection of cooking tools, but at the same time started berating two people for peddling branded merchandise. Those two people were Chrissy Teigen, whose mother is from Thailand, and Marie Kondo, who's Japanese. She said some insensitive things, and then Chrissy Teigen wrote this long thread on Twitter to talk about how hurt she was as someone who genuinely loved everything about Alison, and it blew up. Like, Teigen has more than 12 million followers, so... Then Alison Roman apologised, saying that her white privilege had played a role in her making these remarks, and it had played a role in influencing her initial reaction when she was criticised on social media. I can't remember. I think in the beginning she didn't react that well. Her column on New York Times was put on temporary leave, the intention to be reintroduced at some point in the future. Well, Then,
but it hasn't.
I have here that in December 2020, she announced that she was leaving New York Times to begin a new chapter elsewhere. A rep from the paper said that she decided to move on from New York Times and we're thankful for her work with us. Shortly after that kind of incident as well, the whole Bon Appetit thing blew up, which we spoke about before. And she was kind of embroiled in that, wasn't she? Remember that podcast Reply All, which ironically then came under its own issues for the same thing.
Yeah, so the podcast was never finished, so we never got to the end of it. But she was very much, her name came up a lot, didn't it?
Because it was like all these people of descent from like various minorities, and they were doing all the grafting, coming up with all these great recipes, and then getting none of the credit, and all the white people were basically like rising up at Bon Appetit and getting all the pay rises and recognition, and Alison Roman's name kept coming up. But then when it all blew up and it became public, she then lent her voice in support of them, which was only weeks after this whole thing with Chrissy Teigen and Marie Kondo. And she was like, basically implied that there was a reason that she'd left Bon Appetit, and it was partly because of this injustice.
Yeah, I feel like it was never in that situation, it was never clear that she was doing anything derogatory or mean-spirited towards people of color. It was more like she was getting promoted ahead of them,
and
they were doing all of the recipe testing and stuff for her recipe. Yeah. So it was never made clear that it was her in the wrong, or it was likely further up the chain, but she was benefiting from that in a very serious way.
Yes, agreed. I think it was just more kind of a comparison thing, right? She says elsewhere, though, that she decided to quit Bon Appetit during a meeting for a Thanksgiving issue. It implies because she was just really bored of the kind of seasonality of a lot of food writing. So the quote is, everyone was shitting on every idea. How do we make it new? How do we make it different? And I think she just got like really fed up. Now she has a YouTube channel called Home Movies that launched in 2021. And it's quite like artsy and cool. I think she releases a new video every week. She continues to share recipes through social media. She's got a Substack newsletter called A Newsletter. I feel like that's like classic hipster and minimalism, isn't it? What am I going to call it? A newsletter. And then what's weird is, and I'm wondering if anyone who's listening can help find out what happened here, but like in January of this year, CNN Plus, which is their subscription streaming service, announced that she was going to join as host of a brand new highly opinionated and never finicky cooking show for CNN. And then I just can't find anything about it anywhere, but it was due to go live in like spring of 2022. Maybe I missed something online, but yeah, if anyone knows anything about that, let me know.
Maybe I was gonna say maybe it's something to do with her Substack or her YouTube, because I feel like I logged on to her, I looked at her Substack earlier, of which I'm not a subscriber, but it says Alison Roman has tens of thousands of subscribers, so I'm sure I read something once about how much income she must make monthly from that, and it is insane.
It is
like she didn't need a New York Times column, she didn't right?
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of a whistle stop tour of her career. The first book she did was actually kind of like a mini cookbook. I don't know if it like qualifies in its own right, but it was called Lemons, and it was 20 recipes dedicated to lemons, believe it or not. And then she did this one, which is Dining In, which I'll be talking about today. And then she did Nothing Fancy, which you're going to be talking about. And then she's got another one coming out next year called Sweet Enough, a baking book.
Oh, that is her book?
Yes. Which I think would be great, because I have things to say about this book, but the baking section is great, or it looks great, and I think baking's her thing.
I feel like another recipe of hers during lockdown that went kind of viral was that lemon turmeric cake, was it?
Yes, I did that.
Which is from this book, which is from Nothing Fancy. I noticed it was in here. I feel like there was a time when like everyone was making that as well.
I made that and it's very good.
It's just good.
Just damn good. She's a good pastry chef, man. But anyway.
Yeah. Should you go first? Should I go first? Should you go first because it was first? Or
I'll talk about my first impressions of dining in.
Guys,
Vic already knows that I'm a bit pissed off with this book. And I don't know why that is. I think there's a number of reasons. Mostly, it's quite meaty and fishy, and it's really hard to find anything that doesn't have some... And I fucking hate dill, and there's dill everywhere in this. So I even had to leave it out of one of the recipes that I made. I only made two things, because...
Oh. That's all you can get in Brooklyn. They just grow dill everywhere. You just walk around the streets, there's dill growing, just so they have to
fronds of dill everywhere. Her and Molly just picking all the dill.
Her and Molly just frolicking in the dill fields of Brooklyn. Sorry.
This is a beautiful looking book. It's a very trendy, like, cool a photo on the cover of quite white and, like, hands, you know, dipping into plates and stuff, which is not dissimilar to Nothing Fancy, right? Is the cover?
Let me see yours.
I'll show you. Get ready.
Oh yeah. They're basically the same.
Yeah. Like, big white border.
Yeah.
But this is all caps dining in, and you've got lower caps. Yeah. Nothing fancy. Oh. Sexy.
And I've got her like wiping the plate with her bare hands with her perfectly manicured red nails. Anyway.
So the premise of this book is, eat at home. She likes eating out, but she also believes in cooking at home, and that, like...
What a hero.
Yeah, to be fair, I've said shit like this before, that often I feel a bit hard done by if I go out and pay, like, you know, whatever amount of money for a meal, and actually if you spent the same on loads of great ingredients and cook for a couple of hours at home, you'd have something good. But that's just me. Well, no, it's just me and Alison, you know, we're just those kind of gals.
Peas in a pod.
She says, here you'll find a collection of recipes that are neither obnoxiously aspirational nor so obvious that you'd wonder why you bought this book, but they'll fall somewhere delightfully in the middle, full of advice that will help you to become a better cook along the way. But yeah, so basically my moment of disappointment was I had all my sisters come into London. I was very excited, all being three. And
it's quite a lot of sisters.
That's a lot of Ireland, isn't it? One was arriving before the others, so I was going to cook her dinner, Rachel, and I was like, oh, I'll just look to this book for something to make. And I was just like, I wasn't seeing anything. I wasn't, like, really inspired. Every time I opened one that I thought would work, there was meat or something in it. And then other stuff was just a bit meh. Yeah, some of the ingredients piss me off. They're not easy to get. It veered between, like, meaty and too simple. Or meaty or fishy and too simple. And I was just a bit, like... It was the perfect opportunity for me to make something nice. And I just felt like all the vegetable dishes felt like sides.
Yeah.
And I was just... Ugh. Anyway. What were your first impressions?
Of my book or yours?
Of your book.
I'll be honest, Pam, exactly the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this book, Nothing Fancy, which I keep trying to call...
Lives up to the name.
Yeah, honestly. So this is all about, like, having people over, right? It's not an entertaining book, even though it's an entertaining book. Spoiler alert. So she says it's like, it's unfussy food, unfussy vibes.
Vibes.
Yeah, but, oh my God, talking about vibes, the whole fucking thing reads like a meme. Like, honestly, like, she's like, she writes these paragraphs, you know, at the beginning of recipes or at the beginning of chapters, and it's just like, da-da-da-da-da, thank you for coming to my TED talk. Da-da-da-da. And I was like, oh my God, like, just relax. Stop trying to go viral. Like, we get it, you've been viral. And look, I am the first to say that I love Alison Roma's recipes. I've made a lot of them.
Yes.
I love the cookies. I love...
Yes.
She has, like, a buttery pasta thing.
Right.
Pasta sauce that you just, like... You, like, crush tomatoes. Anyway, put it in the oven for ages. It's beautiful.
Lovely. And she was one of our passwords.
Yeah.
For one of the cookbook circle things. You know, hackers come at us, but we loved her.
And, you know, I'm not saying... But loved, it's just... Loved. It's just... I don't know. It's exactly the same as you say. So she... she says it's for having people over. That shouldn't be a chore. It should be a, you know, it should be not quick, but easy. You shouldn't be stressed about it.
Yeah.
You can do like fun things that are like simple, quote unquote, unfussy. And she says, it's not an entertaining book, but it's a way to feed more people.
This thing, she refuses to call it entertaining. She calls it having people over. I read that in one of the things. And that's fine. I mean, if you happen to call it that, that's totally fine. But don't make it like a personal policy. Yeah.
It's all just... and so she splits it. So the book is split into what she thinks are the five key components of having people over. And that is snacks, but never call them canapes or hors d'oeuvres.
Read that.
Salads, mains, vegetables, and sweet things. Right?
Okay. Are the mains all
the
meaty?
The mains are entirely meaty. There is not... Mm. I'm just looking down now. Because I also had a moment where I'd cooked one thing, and then I had some people coming for lunch, and one of them was a veggie. And I was like, oh, I'll knock something off from this book. It'll be great. I can.
Yeah.
Literally nothing. Literally nothing. I ended up making the beans from Molly. Like, for them. Because it's the perfect thing for, like. Yeah, anyway. That's for another day. But yeah, I can. Ricotta. She's got ricotta stuffed shells with burrata, mushrooms, and herbs.
Big pasta. Lots of pasta recipes.
There's not that many in here, but yeah, basically. Nothing. All of the vegetable recipes are sides.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's very meaty. Also, she calls it unfussy and simple and stuff, but the ingredients lists run to like almost a whole page for most of the things.
Oh, really?
It's not stuff you're just gonna have like lying around. Like,
no.
I had to get gochujang for one of mine. And could I find it anywhere for some reason, even though it's like the coolest thing at the moment? I couldn't find it anywhere. But yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's...
Same. Radicchio, rock melon, persimmon. Shit, that's hard to find. Yeah. I mean, definitely sure out of season. But like still, even so, it's not your bog standard stuff.
No. We're not a budget cookery podcast. Of course, but none of this stuff is cheap. It's all like, particularly for the salads and vegetables and the meat. Like, you know, she wants butcher steak with dried trillion sorted peanuts. Oof. Also, this is another thing that like annoys me. She's trying to go viral. She has a whole thing called Sausage Party, which is about sausages. Like, okay.
Like you don't love a sausage party.
I mean, look, I love a sausage all day. I love all the different types of sausages. Particularly beef hot dogs. We don't get those enough here.
I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So it's a beautiful book that it does have some really nice recipes in it, but it's absolutely crap for vegetarians. And I think you're right about the simpleness of some of these, particularly with the vegetables. Like,
yeah.
Hard roasted spiced cauliflower is just like three things, like with cauliflower in the oven. And there's like this, I had it open to this page before, but like there's a leek recipe where you kind of burn the leeks, and that's basically all you do. And it looks so bad. But yeah, I just think, yes, don't buy it if you're a vegetarian. Either of these books, I guess.
Same. Yeah, same.
Do you want to talk to us about what you cooked?
Yeah.
Vitamin D.
But no, the listeners are just going to be like, wow, these guys are... Look, it's another 8 p.m. record, but we're just... The energy isn't here when it comes to Ms. Roman. I made two things. One was because I get a little thing called the Odd Box. I'm not sure if you've heard of it. No.
I literally just got an email while we're recording saying your Odd Box has been delivered, and I was like, ooh, I wonder what's in it.
It came with a load of beetroot, and we've said this before, but it's always hard to know what to do with beetroot. Tempted as I was to return to Mira Soda East, knowing that she has loads of beetroot recipes in there, Alison Roman has one for vinegar roasted beetroot with spring onion and yogurt.
Doesn't she love vinegar?
Loves vinegar. Loves acid, I think, in general.
Yes, yes. Lemons, vinegar.
Yeah.
That's a real
North American thing, I think. Like, I feel like a lot of the US and Canadian chefs that I've seen, like, talk a lot about acid. And it's fair, don't get me wrong, but it's just like, you know, to the point of being, again, like a personal policy. Anyway, so this is, I mean, these are meant to be baby beetroot, in brackets, beets. She loves brackets it too, eh?
Doesn't she? I feel like she can't go a paragraph without, like, a side
a
note.
Aside. A little, yeah.
Like, it's almost off-putting. Imagine. Imagine being put off by her. It's constant. Like, in this one, for anyone looking for tips on how to fold linen napkins or create floral arrangements, I'm not your girl. I don't have any clever hosting tips, and I will not teach you the secrets to mood lighting. Brackets. I told you, this is not an entertaining book, but also candles. Close brackets. And it's shit like that. And like, anyway.
But, yeah, so this is baby beetroot or beets. I just had regular sized beetroot. I cut some of them up. White vinegar, olive oil, salt and pepper, spring onions, Greek style yogurt, lime juice, dill. Left that smelly little herb out of there. So stinky. Anyway.
I love it.
So you put on the oven. Put on the oven. Quick. Go.
I'm going. I'm going to get my odd box and put the oven on.
You divide the beetroot into two groups and place each set on separate large pieces of foil. I'll never know why they need to be separated, those two groups of beetroot. I don't know what they were going to do if I put them together, but I went along with it anyway. So it would be really nice to have just, you know, a rationale for these things. But anyway, you drizzle each set of beetroot with a tablespoon of vinegar, oil, salt, pepper. You wrap them tightly so it creates like a little steam packet. And then you roast them it took about an hour for me for them all to be cooked through. And then you're meant to peel the beetroot. I didn't really bother because the skins were like fairly thin and I'm lazy.
Nobody likes to peel a beetroot anyway. You end up with it in your nails for the next 6 weeks.
Yeah, she does say, to be fair, using a paper towel or a tea towel you don't mind staining forever, peel the beetroot. Then you heat the remaining tablespoon of oil in a large skillet, and then you put spring onions in and you like char them over the heat. Yeah, until they're like charred and brown or black or whatever. And then in a different bowl you combine the yogurt, lime juice, and you season that with salt and pepper. Spoon that on the bottom of a platter or a bowl or whatever. So you've got the yogurty bit on the base, beetroot, and then you put the spring onions on top of there and the dill if you're using it. And it was fine. It was fine. I was missing some crunch, like as in some like some toasted like hazelnuts or something.
Yes,
might have been nice there.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah, maybe some spice, some like a little bit of heat somewhere would have been good. It was fine. It was fine. I didn't love it. I don't think I would make it again. It was just, I made it because I had all the things, right? So it was just like, grand. A little kind of lunchtime veggie thing. Fine. But I would build on it. Yeah, maybe put some nuts or whatever on and some flatbread to maybe like, scoop it up into or something. It has the beginnings of, I don't know, some kind of ottolenghi combination.
Sure.
But it's just missing a bit more of the other stuff. And then the second thing that I made was, except I changed basically all of the ingredients, was the frozen blackberries and labneh with honey.
Ooh.
So this, there was just tons of raspberries and strawberries around, like really cheap because it was summer. And she does say that you can use fresh blackberries, raspberries, or hulled and quartered strawberries. So I used a mix of raspberries and strawberries. And this is essentially like a loaf cake, like a yogurty ice cream kind of frozen loaf cake thing.
Yeah, sounds really nice.
It is, it's good. So it's really, again, in this book at least, it's probably only ever, at least on the recipes that I looked at, like 6-7 ingredients. The berries, honey, double cream, labneh or a Greek style yogurt, and a pinch of salt. You basically just like line a loaf tin with cling film, and then you cook the fruit and some honey until in a pot until they've kind of reduced down into like a jammy kind of consistency. And then you let them cool. And then you whip the cream fold in the labneh or the Greek yogurt, some more honey and a bit of salt, which is nice. And then you fold the berries into that mix, barely, she says, maybe 3 or 4 times, leaving large streaks of berry throughout. And then you put that into the loaf tin. You smooth the top and then you put the loaf tin in the freezer until the mixture has firmed up about 2 hours. She says this is best served around the 2-3 hour mark. But she also says if it sits longer, then take it out for like 5 or 10 minutes to soften up, or like do it a week in advance. So yeah, it makes just like a kind of ice cream cake loaf thing.
Nice. How was it?
It was nice. Yeah. The sum of its parts. Kind of like a frozen eaten mess, yeah. without the meringue. Yeah, it was good. I still have like a ton of it in my freezer because you're not going to eat all that, right? I don't even think I've taken a decent photo of it, so I better get onto that pretty soon. It's good. It's a nice summer dessert. But I think like,
your enthusiasm again, for these recipes. Low.
It's unusual for me. I think I always try to be really nice, but like I would like a serving suggestion or something. Yes. Like,
I was going
to
say, could you make it into a cookie? Could you serve it with a cake? Like what's yeah. the...
I think you're meant to just serve like a slice of it, you know, but if she said like hold back some berries and serve it with them, or like hold back, you know, drizzle over like a coulis or something like that, yeah. then you'd have a better idea. But now it's just like me at 9 o'clock opening the freezer and taking a spoonful. Slice out of there.
When you're feeling sad, just go at it with a spoon.
If you're angry at the rest of my book, go comfort you by opening the freezer. So yeah, they were the 2 things that I cooked.
All right. Should I tell you what I cooked?
Yes. What did you cook, Victoria? I hope it went better than mine.
So I cooked 2 things, one of which I had to cook twice because it was a fucking disaster the first time. But I'll tell you about that later. The first thing that I cooked was coconut braised chicken with chickpeas and lime.
Oh.
It's a stew. She loves a fucking stew. She said... She says... This chicken stew is sort of having an identity crisis, brackets. Is it cow soy inspired? Tikka masala leaning? It's not tikka masala leaning. Wait, why is there Korean chili paste in this recipe? Close brackets. But I can assure you it's very happy living its best life, meme, in as whatever fusion cuisine this is. Before you ask, yes, this can be made in a pressure cooker. I wasn't going to ask. Like, you know, let's cut to the end. This was nice. But also, it says it serves 4 to 6, and it's the biggest thing. I literally had to put tea towels around my casserole dish because it was like coming out of the sides when it was cooking. It's so much. So you need 1.8 kilograms of bone-in skin on chicken.
Right. That's a lot.
It is a lot. Almost 2 kilograms, which obviously you know that.
1.8 is close to 2, right?
Yeah, it is. So you sear the chicken, you know, like render the fat off that, about 10 minutes. And then you take the chicken out, add garlic and onion to the pot, and then you add gochujang, which I couldn't find. I went to a million shops, so I used... She does say you can use tomato paste.
That is not the same.
No, it's not the same. But I ended up using like a smoked tomato paste that I found M&S, which I've used before, actually, and it's really nice. So add gochujang, ginger, turmeric, cumin seeds and chili flakes, and cook until the mixture is caramelizing on the bottom of the pot. So that makes like a nice... You can imagine that looks like a nice like paste with all those bits. Really nice. It smells amazing. Da-da-da. So then you add the coconut milk, 2 tins.
Wow.
So all that chicken, 2 tins of coconut milk, return to a simmer, return the chicken to the pot and add the chickpeas, 2 tins.
Wow. It's getting busy in there.
Salt and pepper, place the lid on, walk away for at least 45 minutes. My pot was very, very full. at this point. And
that's not a euphemism.
It was, I had to, you know, as we know, I've just had my kitchen done. And I did not want turmeric staining my fucking
tops.
So I was like padding around the thing. I was like, I can ruin a tea towel. So 45 minutes. After 45 minutes, you remove the lid and keep letting it simmer for another 20 to 25 minutes. And you add some fish sauce.
Right.
And then you serve it alongside the rim. So you leave a little bit of like raw onion, coriander, some crushed peanuts and some lime. And boom. So it's like a coconutty chicken, chickpea stew. It's nice. Again.
Kind of South Indian-y kind of flavors. Yeah,
she's right. Like, you know, why have you got fish sauce and gochujang? That's kind of strange. Like I said, it's not tikka masala leaning at all. Is that just because she's got like turmeric and ginger? I don't know. But yeah, coconut milk. But it works. It's absolutely delicious. Like, it's really nice.
Okay, good.
I think I could have left it, like, you know, on the simmering away for another 10 or so minutes, but it was very late at night by this point. We all just wanted to eat. It was nice. It was too big. Like, I don't understand, like, who has a pot that big. Like, I got some pretty big pots, and that is not a euphemism either. And also, same thing as you, no serving suggestion. I had no idea what
rice?
To do. Like, I made rice in the end. I was gonna make her, she has like a turmeric rice in here, which sounds really
loves
nice,
but turmeric.
Loves turmeric, but I just didn't have time in the end, because I was gonna serve it in a very non-traditional way, with whatever it is, with her, and wait for it, garlic bread, which the name of the recipe is a better garlic bread / caramelized garlic on toast with anchovies.
Wow.
So this is what was turned into a disaster.
Oh no.
So I fucked up garlic bread is what I'm telling you. But first of all, it's absolutely not better. Just buy it. 25p in the shop, in it, like for a whole baguette of garlic bread, and it is absolutely not better. It's the most average garlic bread I've ever eaten, probably, and it takes over an hour to make.
Oh mate, no.
And I made it twice because I fucked it up. So what you do is you have a whole garlic bulb and you separate the cloves, crush them, chop them. You just crush them. You just crush them. But peeled, obviously. And what you do is you put the garlic and the olive oil in a pot over a medium heat until the garlic starts to audibly sizzle. And then you turn the heat to the lowest.
As opposed to a quiet, I don't know. And there's no such thing as a silent sizzle. But silent sizzle is a great band name.
Silent sizzle. So you have your audible sizzle, and then you turn it down to the lowest possible setting and continue to cook until the garlic is totally tender and golden brown, 15 to 20 minutes.
That was the gin tin that I've just finished drinking, falling over. It's been a hard week, pals, and it's only Wednesday.
It's only Wednesday. So you do that. So the first time I made this, I burnt the garlic, basically.
I hate that.
Because it's very easy to do. Garlic is very easy to burn. I followed everything to the letter, but it burnt. So it was already ruined, but I carried on with the recipe. Anyway, so once you've done that, and you've got your golden brown garlic, which I managed to do the second time, you add a whole tin of anchovies.
Okay.
Drained.
Was that you or the anchovies?
Both.
Drained.
She doesn't say to cut the anchovies up, but I did, because you're going to spread it on bread. And then you put all of that oil mixture into a bowl with 125 grams of butter.
Yes. But that's not unusual, right? Because garlic, if you're making garlic bread from home.
Oh, yes.
I don't know why you've cooked the garlic, though. Finish the recipe.
Because it's a better garlic bread. It's caramelized garlic on toast with anchovies.
It's not caramelized.
So then you add that to butter and some chili flakes, and then you smash everything together so that the garlic cloves break down and everything turns into a delicious creamy paste. Does it ever get to a delicious creamy? Does it ever get to paste? No. There's too much oil for it to be a paste, in my humble opinion. Never got to, I did it twice and it never went to a paste.
Could not you have just mushed up some butter, garlic, anchovy and chili, like raw, not cooked any of that, and then put it on the bread? What, how do you cook? Sorry, I keep interrupting. I have notes.
It basically just says add it, season with salt and pepper. God knows where you need to put salt when you've got a whole fucking tin of anchovies in there. And then you cut a baguette lengthwise, and then you add it to the baguette, letting it really soak in.
Yeah. And then what?
And then you bake it until they are,
yes,
the until their edges are golden brown with soft and supple centers. Brackets. The only time I use the word supple. Remove from the oven and sprinkle with flaky salt, more fucking salt, and parsley if using.
Not dill.
So, not dill.
So, yes, to my mind, I've made mm-hmm. many a garlic bread from home when you don't have any and you just you want some and you have all the ingredients. And all you ever do is smush up garlic, chopped garlic or whatever, with normal cold butter, spread it on the bread in whichever, you know, way you want to do it, with the little like Hasselback style, or you want to have it or whatever, and then you put it in the oven. So what is to be gained from cooking the garlic with the anchovies and oil and extra shit when it cooks in the oven anyway, essentially, right? And then you don't have to, you don't risk burning it. I don't know if there's such a thing as caramelized garlic.
I agree with you on every single level of this. I think that maybe if you roasted the garlic,
yes,
that may add something.
Like the way they do on Instagram at the moment, where it's like a whole head in the tin foil and you squeeze it. Yeah.
If you did that, I think it would be delicious. You could still add the anchovies.
Yes.
Great. She loves a fucking anchovy, doesn't she? Sorry.
But so do we. Sorry,
I don't mean to swear. We do. And she does have a recipe in this book for like potato chips and anchovies. Like that's the recipe.
That's it. That's the tweet.
That's the tweet. That's probably her paragraph. So the first time I made this, I'd already messed up the butter. And then I burnt the bread in the oven. Because I wasn't paying attention. Because I was paying attention to my oozing stew.
Last euphemism of the episode, friends.
So absolutely do it. If you've got this book and you or you buy this book, I don't know why you would off the back of this episode. don't make the garlic bread. Bonus recipe from me.
Oh, is good.
That, as I've said before in this episode, I like generally. I think this is the thing. This is why I'm upset with this book, because it's kind of let me down, because I've been such a fan of her recipes before.
Yes! Yes!
And
she
so,
was our password.
Yes. I hope we've changed that password today. But previously, I have made her this recipe in this book called Sticky Chili Chicken with Hot and Sour Pineapple. And that shit bangs.
Okay.
I was going to make it again, but unfortunately, the person, my friend Carly, who was coming, who I was making it for, who was who I made that pineapple thing for, and I didn't want to be like, I'm a one-hit wonder, I'm only making you one thing. But that is really good. You basically just marinate chicken and pineapple, chicken and pineapple in red wine vinegar, sambal paste, fish sauce, chili flakes, lime juice for fucking ages. She says at least
sambal.
Yeah, like a sambal Indonesian.
Yes, I think it is. But you know, as my eye wanders over the contents here, I just think so many niche ingredients.
Yes,
you know.
Oh my god, so many. I remember at the time I couldn't find that, and I was living in London and I couldn't find it in my Asian supermarket, so I used a different, something a bit different. She does say, or other chili paste, but like Sambal has a certain taste to it, right? Like,
yeah, same as gochujang. Like, it's
yeah, right. I don't think you could put gochujang in this. Anyway, that's really nice, and I guess that recipe is available elsewhere. And she does say you can eat that with a pot of rice. That was delicious. Anyway, yes. Yeah. So I'm disappointed. The thing with chicken and chickpeas was nice, but just so big. We ate it for about 3 days afterwards.
You are a chicken and chickpeas. You are one.
I am.
I was close to... I was skipping ahead there to the next section. But I was going to say there's a cocoa banana bread recipe in here that I was going to complete your little, you know, banana bread trend and make that. But then I didn't. I don't really love chocolate and banana together, if I'm honest.
I feel like you are a big believer in not just adding chocolate for chocolate's sake, would you say?
Oh, 100%. Do not believe it. It's quite strong. It's quite overpowering. My sister Ursa says this, and she's right. When chocolate is added to something, then that's all you can taste.
It's chocolate.
Yeah, it's chocolate. Like, it's never like, ooh, a hint of chocolate. No, the main thing is chocolate. That said, there is a chocolate tahini tart with crunchy salt in here that sounds really good.
That does sound good.
Some of my favourite things. No, just tahini and salt. There's these buttered buttered raspberry hand pies recipe that sound really good too. Brown butter buttermilk cake
sounds nice.
You'll note that a lot of these are the sweet things that I'm interested in. There's roasted sweet potatoes with hot honey browned butter.
That sounds nice.
Hot honey browned butter sounds like what I call you when we're not recording the podcast.
That's the name of our OnlyFans.
This roasted tomato and anchovy bucatini. Again, like, just make it spaghetti and then we can all buy it. You know, start making it this niche spice black lentil.
Oh, that might be that roasted tomato and anchovy bucatini might be that pasta that I love to make.
Oh, is it? Oh, maybe. Hot honey brown butter. Any that you wanted to make from Nothing Fancy?
Yeah, there was quite a few. Well, a little bit of what I thought, you know, that I've got a lot of bookmarks. I bought this. Well, I say I bought the stuff. She has a recipe for... Let me find it. Oh, yeah. Fruit. Shishito peppers with yuzu kashor, right?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. So, I don't know what a shishito pepper is, but they looked a lot like... padrone peppers.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just buy some of those because they sell them in Lidl. And so with yuzu kashor, which
she loves this. She talks about this a lot, but I don't know if I know what it is. I know what a yuzu is, but
yes. So kashor is the Japanese word for like pepper.
Okay.
So it's like I have loads in the cupboard because I love it. It's so good. And I'm glad that she has it. That's why I was like, oh, I have it. I could make... It's like literally just those two ingredients, maybe with a bit of, oil. And it's like a salt or a pepper. And it's infused with... It's like almost like pickly and... So usually it's like a citrus fruit, somewhere between a grapefruit and an orange. Oh, and it's my favourite thing. Put it on avocado and toast. Game changer.
Ooh, nice.
And like on tofu... and I always get some when I go, obviously when I go to Japan, it's a Japanese thing. So I was going to make that, but then I just never got round to it. But I also added some padrone peppers to my odd box this week because they had them. So I'm going to make it.
Nice.
And if I do,
we'll just, you just send me a voice note and I'll just insert it in here.
Yeah. Hello.
Cool.
That's how I talk when I'm not on the pod.
This is her sexy voice.
And if I can find the picture of that, pineapple thing, I definitely will send that as well. Crispy vinegared potatoes with chili paprika. That sounds nice.
Yeah, she's got crispy smashed potatoes with fried onion and parsley in here, which sounds good.
It's just a rehash, isn't it? did I have any? No, I'm joking.
We haven't been this cutting about books. For a while, have we?
Since Jamie. He's got a new book out anyway.
To think what? Because it's a new week.
Sun's going down. Better release a new book. What's on her sweet things here that sounds nice? She has a crispy, doesn't it? Crispy chocolate cake with hazelnut sour cream.
Yeah, I'm on the swordfish steak with crispy capers page, actually. There's a double crust peach. Sorry, no, and just in mind. Back to me. Sorry, it's been a few minutes. Double crust peach pie with honey, ginger, and lime. That sounds nice.
Yeah, sour cherry and sesame galette. That sounds like
okay. I'm there for that. Yeah. But where do you find a sour cherry?
Don't know. Just leave them out for a few weeks and they'll go a bit sour.
Let them listen to this podcast. They'll get good and bitter.
Put some vinegar on them. She loves that shit.
We should rate.
It's gonna be a good one, lads. Shall I talk about our rating system?
Yes, please.
Okay. So, for all you newbies, sorry about the anger in this one. I don't know what's wrong with us, actually. You've just let us down, Ali, you know?
You know, you pay £20 or whatever it is for a book and then you can only cook a couple of recipes from it. Yeah.
Yeah, that sucks. And I didn't even have that problem when I was disappointed. Mm. Anyway. But every episode we rate every cookbook out of 5, and each of those 5 has a different criteria, and they are as follows: usability. Easy for me to say. One episode Hannah or I will get through the rating without fucking it up. We are a season and a half in and it hasn't happened yet. Usability and accessibility. That's one. Ingredients used. How easy are the ingredients to find, etc. Aesthetics. How does it look? Is it veggie friendly? And inspirability. How inspired do we feel? And every episode we also change what we rate out of based on the chef or book. Why are you laughing?
The weariness of this is just so good.
And so, yeah, we change it. So for Alison, we are going to rate her out of brackets. Because she talks a lot in brackets.
Yeah.
So we did think about rating her out of dill.
Yeah, many things. We could have also rated out of anchovies.
Yes, anchovies.
Yeah. Trendy photos. Chicken. She loves chicken.
She does love chicken. Crispy things. But also just to say, I feel like I haven't said this before, but also I just feel like if you'd given me this book and told me it was Molly Baz, I would have believed you.
So that's an interesting point, because I actually think Molly Baz comes off better in comparison to these books, to this book.
She comes off better, particularly in our podcast, but I feel like they're very similar vibes, and I don't know, Bon Appetit thing,
yeah,
like this kind of, I don't know, that there's a certain way of cooking or like meal,
yes,
that seems very Bon Appetit-y.
Yeah, Bon Appetit-y. Yes, I know exactly what you mean, and like, not to mention the way they speak and, you know, trying to be quite cool, but I think Molly Baz actually has like more flavor and more elements, you know, like we talked about all of her dishes, or at least I remember saying like that all the dishes were very strong on flavor and texture and things like that, and I thought that's what was missing from here, was that there was just some dishes where I was just like, ah, it's missing that something extra. But I know exactly what you mean, this kind of like,
it seems to be like, yeah, formulaic, like,
yes, yeah, yeah,
you know. I mean, the pictures and the,
yeah,
I feel like the difference, there's a difference in like there's very few eggs in Alison.
Yeah, true. That's
whereas
true.
Molly just, loves an
it's
egg.
It's more chicken.
Yeah.
What came first?
Right. Do you want to rate out of brackets or crispy brackets?
Usability and accessibility, I'm giving it 1, because there's nothing too, I didn't come across anything too tricky, like technique wise or anything. Ingredients used, I'm knocking off half. I'm going to knock off half, because just every episode, every episode.
I think we're having some kind of episode, let me tell you. In all senses of the word.
Just every recipe has something that's hard, like, you know, blood orange with crunchy red onion and avocado, watermelon and cucumber with spicy sumac salt. Like, you mightn't be able to get sumac, you mightn't be able to get blood orange. You know, 50% of the recipe. I could dock a whole point, but I'm going to dock them elsewhere. So
that's so kind.
I'm too kind. So half of that. Aesthetics, beautiful. Yeah, a dream. Veggie friendly. A whole point's coming off there because you do not, I wouldn't even think that there's anything vegan in here. I could be wrong, but it would be in the minority. So no, it's really hard to find anything decent and veggie in this. And then its buyability, I'll take off half a point as well, because, well, no, I'm going to take off a full point. If I have a sister coming over, I think I want to make a nice meal for her and I can't find one thing in the contents that takes my fancy, then I'm not inspired and this is not an inspirable book. So I'm taking off. Was that 2.5 points gone?
Yes.
So I'm giving it 2.5 brackets out of 5.
Oof, that must be the lowest of the season.
For me, it is. I really wanted to like it. I really, really, really did. I was really excited. And then I was pissed off. What are you giving? Nothing fancy.
Well, it's nothing fancy on the score. So usability and accessibility. Like, yeah. Yeah. It gets one. It's fine, like you say. It's a lot of stews. Literally burning leeks. We're fine. I mean, I'm a fucked up garlic bread, so it's me that's the bad cook there, not the bad recipe. So, yes, that's fine. Ingredients used. I feel the same as you. Do I want to take a whole point off or half a point? I feel like a half because, you know, I had most of the things.
Yeah.
Aesthetics, yes, gets a point because it's... Lovely. It's beautiful. It's pretty. Yeah. She's beautiful. She's pretty. And great nails, man.
Good nails. Good clothes.
Yeah. Although she's wearing white jeans on the front cover of mine, and I feel like that's not my jam.
After Labor Day? The audacity.
A little nugget there for our American fans. Veggie friendly, like, absolutely not. Like, vegetables are literally a side thought in this. Yeah. Like, they're only sides, there's no vegetable mains, definitely no vegan stuff. So no, and yeah, inspirability, I'm also taking a whole point off because I just can't imagine myself thinking, I know, I've got someone coming over, let me go char some leeks or something. I mean, you know, it's got some gems, that pineapple thing is great, but it takes a whole day. So yeah, so it's 2.5 for me as well. 2.5 brackets, crispy brackets. I don't think she's going to be shouting us out on our Substack.
No, sorry.
To our tens of thousands of followers. Sorry, Alison. But that's okay. We're honest. We're here to be honest. And we wanted to like
it. She'll be honest too. Her personal brand is like brutal. Yes. What is it called?
Honest.
Candor or whatever the fuck.
And you know what? If we come back and do her baking book in a season or two's time, then we might have something completely different to
say. I agree. And maybe we should, you know? Maybe one of our seasons
redemption
is coming back. Yeah, the redemption series, and it's coming back to the French Laundry and Mama Fuku.
No, I'm never going back to the French Laundry. I will never. I refuse.
Let's talk about our next book.
Okay. We're coming back on home soil.
Yeah, baby.
We're linking back to the Great British Bake Off.
Yes, we've come full circle since the start of the episode to now. Look at that.
It was planned. Or was it? We'll never know. And so we are doing a book by Nadia Hussein.
National Treasure.
National Treasure. Maybe, you know, love of my life. Not sure. We'll see.
Apart from me, hot honey, brown butter.
My son. husband, I guess. But
yummy.
They're quite fairly relevant. And basically, it's her book, Nadia Bakes. She has an awful lot of books. But we... In discussion on what we should do, she won the Great British Bake Off. We should do her baking book.
Yes. Not to mention, Vic sent me her book like last year when it came out, this exact book. So it was kind of nice that I already had it.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to our slight moan fest today, friends. Sorry that, you know, the vibes weren't as hella good as usual.
The vibes were off.
Sorry, but it's just, they bummed us out. It bummed us out. We don't want you to be bummed out. We want you to know the truth.
Yeah, exactly. We want you to save your money and buy Mira Soda's book or...
Katie McKinnon.
Good books. Or Molly Baz, frankly.
Yeah, agreed.
If you're looking for a Bon Appetit style recipe book, buy Molly Baz.
Yeah.
Particularly if you are... vegetarian, vegan, flexitarian.
Yes.
Because this is not the one for you.
No, sorry. But yeah, love ya. Thanks for listening.
Love you. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, if you would like more of these impeccable vibes, you can sign up to our Patreon. Link in the show notes, and we'd be very, very grateful. And thank you to our Patreon pals.
We love you all.
And
regardless,
we'll let you know when the OnlyFans gets up and running.
Baby, Great British Take Off. Oh, guys, are you missing it? Vic's taking it off right now.
I'm literally not.
We gotta go. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and leave us a review, as it helps others to find us. You can see how recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye!